Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, this is Jessica and
Stacy.
And we are here with, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Mark Thompson, and I'm a voiceover actor. I do cartoons, commercials, and audiobooks.
So let's start off with audiobooks, because it is the time of year when a new Star Wars movie is coming out, and you
Are there two of them? Mandalorian?
Mandalorian's a TV series.
Oh, never mind.
Go ahead, Mark. Would you like to weigh in on that?
I thought it was a movie. I don't pay attention.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's lots of stuff coming out. There's a movie coming out, and I actually just narrated a book that's kind of leading up to Rise of Skywalker. It's called Resistance Reborn.
No.
Awesome. Wow.
Yes. And I believe the author is Rebecca Roanhorse, and it's her first Star Wars book. And it's really well done, and some early reviews have come in, and people agree that they seem to really like it. And it kind of talks about what happens right after Last Jedi, and how kind of the Resistance is dealing with the defeat they've suffered, and what they have to do to try to rekindle that spark and kind of get that Resistance going again, and all the challenges that come with that. So it's pretty cool. And there's a lot of really neat cameos in it from other things that people, fans of Star Wars, might recognize.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
So how did you get into, you were voice acting before. How did you begin
audiobooks?
Yes.
Well, so I feel guilty saying this to librarians, but basically, I wasn't much of a reader growing up.
Neither was I.
Really? Okay, now I feel ashamed.
So it was finding the right book, and everything that people were recommending to me wasn't the right book, which is...
Yeah. That's interesting, yeah. Because now I really do genuinely enjoy it and understand the appeal of it. But yeah, I wonder if that's what it was for me as well. But so I would kind of watch the movie or get the Cliff Notes versions for all my homework assignments in school and whatnot. So one day my agent called and, said, have you ever done an audiobook? And honestly, I wasn't that excited about it, because my memory of reading was, it was burdensome and boring and didn't really want to get into that. So I was kind of like, no, not really. And I was kind of getting ready to kind of try to brush it off, because it wasn't really something that sounded that interesting to me. And then she was like, well, would you be interested in doing a Star Wars audiobook? And I was like, whoa, hold on, hold on. So I was really excited about that. And basically they gave me a couple of pages of the book and said, look this over, and then we're going to come in and you'll read it for us. And so I just, I got the pages and I really worked hard at the first one I did was the first in the Legacy of the Force series. And that kind of is the time period after Return of the Jedi and, Luke and Leia, and after Thrawn. And it's actually well after all that. So a lot of books had been written by that point, and they were looking for someone to voice this new kind of 9-book series that was going to be happening. So I did it, and I worked really hard on the voices, and I prayed about it. I was like, God, please let me get this. So I feel like I got cast because I could kind of imitate the voices and mimic what I had seen in the movies. But learning to really tell the story and learning to kind of make the prose make as much sense as the dialogue was something I had to learn on the fly. And as I went, and luckily the director of these, his name is Kevin Thompson. He's really good at directing these and helped me out a lot with that and kind of coached me through that. So
there's no relation, is there?
No, isn't that weird though? Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That is weird.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. But he does spell it slightly differently than I do. He spells it T-H-O-M. S-E-N, I think. But yeah, but
okay.
And I have the silent P in mine, and and I'm an H, and yeah. So
that's really awesome. So you were a Star Wars fan beforehand, then?
Oh yeah, no, huge Star Wars fan. Like, it's one of those things where I'm one of the kids that, you know, it just was ever present, and it, like, some of my earliest memories are playing with the figures and watching it on TV. And
same.
So it was kind of always there for me. So.
Yeah, and Syosset, we have a bit of a Star Wars connection ourselves.
We do.
We do. Stacy, how do you not know this?
Oh, you're talking about Natalie Portman?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't grow up here.
Right, right, right. So
I was like, what are you doing? I grew up in the town over and had different celebrities at my high school.
So Natalie Portman, a.k.a. Padme Amidala, grew up here in Syosset.
No way.
Way.
Yeah, she's a Syosset alum.
Yeah. So
that's really cool.
Thank you. So we have the Force here. the mother of Luke and Leia.
The chosen one, yeah.
And so that's kind of our little Star Wars connection. And I grew up a huge fan and still am. And you know, we do a lot of Star Wars stuff here at the library.
Yeah, because I'd say a lot of us are fans. I'd say I'm later to the game of the fandom, just because my family didn't, like, grow up really watching it or anything.
Uh-huh.
So when I was, like, I guess, like, high school, college, I was like, oh, and like a little, maybe like middle school, because my friends would talk about it and I'm like, what? And I'd, like, watch them if they popped up on, like, whatever TV was having a marathon at the time. I was like, oh, I'll watch some of it. And then I binged watched, like, all of them. Before the new trilogy came out, I was like, let's do this.
Cool.
So I could say I've watched them all now.
And we've had the Empire Saber Guild, which is like a costuming group, and the 501st here. We've had R2 builders.
They're really cool.
Yeah.
I want to build my own R2D2.
I'm actually a recent member of the Empire Saber Guild.
No way.
Nice.
Yeah.
They're very cool. And there's a bunch of librarians who are on their team, at least the temple
cool.
that we've worked with. That's so cool.
Now that you're talking, I think I saw that there's an event, there is events out there and stuff like that. So yeah,
it's good stuff. You were a fan before this. So when you started narrating the books, do you have a favorite character or storyline to narrate?
Oh, like from the Star Wars books that I've done or
both.
Like, yeah,
why not? Yeah, both.
Everything.
Well, I mean, Yoda is probably my all time favorite Star Wars character. So like, I've gotten to do a couple of retellings of Empire Strikes Back. There was like a young adult version of that I got to do. It was really cool. And then I feel like there's been scenes in books where they kind of retell that. So anytime I get to do him is a dream come true and awesome. And, you know, any of that training stuff is really, really cool. And then, you know, like there's so many, like I think now I'm close to 50 of them that I've done. So after a while, they all become precious.
Yeah, of course.
They all come close to you.
They're all really fun. So, I mean, it would be super hard for me to nail it down. Like, I think, like, I got to do the 25th anniversary of the Thrawn trilogy, and that was kind of cool because the one time I actually as a kid picked up a book just to read for fun was that book. Like I went out and bought that book, but because I didn't like reading and I was lazy, I never finished reading it when I actually bought it. So it was kind of a weird full circle moment to like then get hired to like actually read it and like, you know, finish it all the way through. So that was kind of a fun experience just for nostalgia. And then I did really like the Legacy of the Force stuff, just because they dealt with some really interesting stuff about different aspects of the Force and different types of Force users beyond just Jedi and Sith. But they had, like, you know, some Force users that were kind of, you know, learning kind of just trying to find the balance between the two, and some that weren't necessarily able to use the Force, but they had a heightened awareness of the Force, and So it was like that. So some of that stuff was really interesting to me, and I really enjoyed reading that.
That's really cool. I think because there is so much about it, and you know, of course, like why would there just be Jedi and Sith?
Right.
There's definitely
a bigger world.
A bigger world. So you're
totally.
So yourself, would you be dark side, light side, Force sense?
Oh, I'm light side.
Light side.
I'm light side all the way. Yeah. I mean, obviously, we all have the balance and the fight. Right. You know, but I aspire to be a Jedi and to try to tap into the light side as much as possible. So.
Oh, that's so nice.
That's awesome. I would say I would agree. For myself, I try. I definitely try, and I have for you know obviously an FX lightsaber myself. It's yellow concealer.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's yeah,
cool.
But one of your kids is not.
One of my kids is definitely, we're going to have to work on him.
Oh, yeah.
Because he...
I have the same issue.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I have two boys, and one of them I was really worried about for a long time because he always wanted to dress up as the bad guy. And I was like, what does this say about me as a parent? And like, what am I doing wrong? Or, you know... But they just have cool costumes, I think, is the main attraction. But
they do. And my one son, I mean, he's interesting, but he has somehow, like, he gives himself other middle names than the one he's been given. And Darth Vader is in there. It's like his first name, his middle name, then he says Darth Vader, then it's Ninja Turtle, and then it's his last name.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really cool. Is that how he signs his homework and stuff too?
He's only four, but
he
does correct you if you call him his name without the Darth Vader and the Ninja Turtle. He gets very upset, and I've had people ask me if that's really his name, and I'm like, I mean.
That's what he says it is. So that's really impressive.
That's actually a good transition. So you've voiced Ninja Turtles, am I correct?
Yeah, that is right. Yeah, I was going to ask what his favorite one, what's his middle name? What's the one he chose?
Oh, Donatello.
Okay, that's a good one. He's a good one.
He is a good one, although I think like his personality is more Raphael, but whatever.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I want to say 2003, I think. There was a version of it that was on Four Kids, and I did Casey Jones.
Nice.
Was the turtle's best friend, and then a bunch of other ancillary characters and bad guys and stuff. But that was super fun, because I that was another, you know, franchise that I kind of grew up with and was a fan of. So to get to do that was kind of another kind of cool dream come true moment, you know. It was really fun to do. So
how did you get into voice acting in general?
So pretty early on I knew I wanted to act. It was kind of one of the only things that I was halfway decent at, and I had some great teachers that really encouraged me and got me involved in school plays and kind of speech and debate teams and things like that, and really supported me. So I went to NYU to study acting, and then while I was at NYU, there was a, this is before the internet and in the old days, you know, so like, there was like a cork board, and somebody had posted an audition on a cork board for an animated series on MTV. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So like, what you had to do, it was so weird, is there was a phone number, and it just said, you know, leave a voice on, like, do a character voice on the answering machine. And I was like, okay. So it was a cartoon that they were casting about vampires. So I left a voicemail on their answering machine saying something like, I would really like to be in your cartoon. And I was doing like this like weird, creepy Igor voice. And I guess that was enough to get me in the door. So they kind of brought me in, and it turned out that cartoon never went into production, but they wanted to hear me for another cartoon that was a spin-off of this show called Beavis and Butthead. I don't know if you guys know that one or remember that one.
This actually, the one that you're about to talk about is one of my favorite shows of all time.
Oh, that's awesome.
We're big fans.
Big, 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 big fan.
I got cast in Daria, and that was, it was such a funny spinoff of Beavis and Butthead, which I'm sure you guys know, because it was just so different from what that was.
It really was. It was more like Beavis and Butthead was, you know, like a lot of like gags and crudeness, and Daria was pretty deep. Like it had some stuff that happened in it.
It really did. Like
it was more realistic.
Absolutely. And so it was like from ultimate lowbrow humor to highbrow humor. It was just like so, so, so smart and witty and really fun. And, you know, so I got to play Kevin, the quarterback, and I got to play Mr. DiMartino, the history teacher, and Mr. O'Neill, the values teacher.
Who
and,
are completely different. Yeah. I mean,
they're
all so different.
Yeah, that was pretty fun to do. So, and that was kind of my, like basically my first voiceover job. And that's kind of what got me into voiceover. And it was amazing. Like it was so fun. You know, it was kind of, it spoiled me a little bit. Cause I was like, oh, okay. So what happened? Like, you know, I was hoping other jobs would be like that. And it kind of, you know, I peaked kind of early, I guess you could say. and then I went through a valley and then kind of like peaked again with Star Wars stuff. But you know, it was, that was a huge thing to have as your first job, you know, so something like that. It was really fun. The writing was amazing. And the head writer for Daria, I think, is on the Colbert Report now as a writer.
Wow. Oh, that's, so that's actually another connection we have. One of our coworkers, Sharon Long, her husband works for there. Stephen Colbert.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
I think Glenn Eichler was his name, I believe. I'm pretty sure I've seen him in the credits, and I've seen him on some of the sketches they do there. So,
It was really interesting just to take some, like I said before, like to take something like Beavis and Butthead and turn it into just a really good show about being in high school and being a teenager. Mm-hmm. And
Well, like you said, like dealing with kind of serious issues too, and kind of having some social commentary in there. And
it was
very unique, you know.
It really was. I think it was kind of underrated. And the teachers had their stuff going on too. The contrast between Mr. DiMartino and Mr. O'Neill. Were they based on anybody? Because I feel like when I was, you know, when I was watching it, like I could totally be like, oh yeah, in high school,
like
this was the
teacher like
who
this.
Was burned out. Right. And this is the teacher who was like, wanted to be sensitive and wanted to be, you know, but like somehow missed the mark every time, even though he was really trying.
Like Mr. DiMartino, I think I drew mostly inspiration from the artwork because I think they showed me some sketches of what he was going to do. And I just remember seeing the eyeball popping out of his head and just thinking, okay, this guy's like about to have a heart attack or drop dead at any moment. And just, so I think a lot of what inspired that voice was just that eyeball, you know, and just that Darius Morgendorf, you know, like this.
Yeah.
He hates it when I say this, but Mr. O'Neill is basically based on a version of my dad, because whenever my dad was trying to correct me or teach me something, he would talk in this very hushed voice. And it was kind of like sort of condescending, but very, you know, like he was trying to stay calm and, you know.
Right.
So it kind of roughly based that on him. And then Kevin was the closest to me, you know, at that age, because I was like, squeaky voice, you know, so it was just kind of like, all right, babe. So, I
mentioned this in a previous interview, but like I played D&D, and at one point I played a character who was based on Britney.
Oh, no way.
And I'm really surprised anybody in that group still talks to me.
It's long ago. I like wish I was there for that, because that would have just entertained
me. Oh yeah,
me.
No, it was a lot of fun. I was rolling and, you know, just like blind rolling, and ended up with really my character had really low intelligence but really high charisma.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what am I gonna do with this? This.
Like the woman who played her was also incredible. She played Brittany. And Quinn, I believe, and the mom. So it was you know, she was also amazing and just had a really quite a range of like what she could do. And she was really, really awesome.
I didn't. I was just kind of doing a little research before this. I didn't realize. So the actress who played Daria, everybody thought that it was Janine Garofalo, but it's not.
Right.
It's Tracy Grandstaff. And she was on the first. Real World.
Is that true? I don't know. I know. I just knew that it wasn't Janine, but I didn't know that. We never like really got to meet or talk or anything because we always recorded everything separately. So I would never really see the rest of the cast unless it was like a party or something like that, which didn't really happen very often. So it was, but I never really met her. I never really got to talk to her at all, really.
That's kind of an interesting thing about voice acting. Have you done voice acting where you meet the rest of the cast before?
So the only, I shouldn't say the only, well, one of the only shows that that's happened on was Ninja Turtles. And that one, they actually recorded the four or five of us together because they had a booth big enough to do it. And also they just liked the idea of us being able to play off of each other and interact with each other more. But I find that to be very rare. Like most of the time for budget reasons, it's just you recording your lines separately. And then you might pass the other cast members in the hall, you know, in between sessions or whatever. But I think generally they don't do that very often where you're all together because it's just hard to find rooms that are big enough to accommodate all those microphones. And then editing wise, it can be a challenge because sometimes people will step on each other's lines or talk over each other. And you really need the sound to be clear and clean. So it's just your voice when you're doing each line, and that the levels are consistent and all that stuff. So
that makes sense. Cause just even dealing with it, Jessica handles the editing of our podcast more than I ever do. But when talking, like having more than one person in the room, it's kind of like, whoa.
And that also means that I have to listen to my voice over and over and over again.
right.
Which is, yeah. But I guess, so because I know that there's different types of voice acting. I know like in Japan, they seem to get the casts together. But around here, you know, in America more Western, it does seem to be more of a solitary.
Yeah. One of my biggest regrets was I was doing this show called The Wrong Coast. And I was doing a character on it and I was finishing up and I went, you know, the director was saying, you know, actually Mark Hamill is going to be here in a second. If you want to hang around and try to meet him. I was like, really? Oh, no way. So like I went, you know, I was hanging around and he wasn't coming. And then I had to go to the bathroom or something. So I went to the bathroom. And then when I came out of the bathroom, they were like, oh, you just missed him. I was like,
no.
Like, it just happened to be the exact moment that I stepped away. And I was like, no. I've been trying to like meet him ever since. But it was just like, man, that would have been so cool. But yeah, a lot of times it's just you by yourself in the booth. So
that makes sense. I have a family friend who he'll do like voiceover work for commercials. And I've asked him, I'm like, you could do like some of the cartoon stuff. Why don't you like go try and do that? He's like, no, I don't want to do that. That's like out of my league. I was like, what about audiobooks? Because even though I read a lot as a kid, I actually really like audiobooks more now.
Oh,
like,
cool.
Yeah, to the point where I, even though like when I went to Comic-Con this year, I was so excited to... This is like how much of a dork I am at times. I met James Marsters, who's from Spike and Buffy. I know him from a variety of his actual acting work. I'm like, yeah, but me and my husband love you from the Harry Dresden Files. And he's like, thanks. And then I met Benedict Wong to get his autograph and a selfie. And everyone's like, oh, like I'm going to take the one from like, you know, Doctor Strange or Deadly Class. And I was like, no, give me the photo of him doing, because he does the voice for the general in Dark Crystal Age of Resistance. Give me that photo.
Oh, and like the person's like, I recognize his voice. That's cool.
Yeah, his like publicist person, she's like, I think you're the only one who bought this today. And I was like, whatever. I was like, it's cool to like do that. I don't know. I like listening to stuff. So I appreciate you as an audio listener.
Do you do you have a preference, or do you just kind of love it all?
Preference between
audiobooks or cartoons, voiceovers?
I think I love it all. Like, I think like maybe 5 or 10 years ago, I would have said I preferred animation, but now I think I'm starting to lean a little bit more towards audiobooks just because I like the variety of characters I get to play. Like, it's almost like getting to do a one-person show every time you do a book, you know? So it's definitely more challenging and more demanding in terms of the amount of time it takes to record a book versus a cartoon. But you get to do a wider range of things. And, like, you know, although with animation, I've been lucky and gotten to do a pretty wide range of characters. But a lot of times it's, the same type of scenarios or the same type of jokes and character voices over and over and over and over and over again. So, I love them both for different reasons. Because I think with animation, I can be a little more wacky and wild and kind of bigger. Mm-hmm. But with the audiobooks, I've really kind of fallen in love with telling the story and kind of, you know, learning how to do that was kind of been really, really
awesome.
Rewarding.
Plus, you get kind of the in on Star Wars before.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Definitely yeah. Being involved with that. When you're working on them, do you talk a lot with, like, the authors or anybody, like, from, like, I don't know, like, Lucasfilms? Like, do you, like, bounce ideas off of them?
So, not really. And I'd like to, but it kind of boils down to a budget and a timing thing. Mm-hmm. 'Cause, like, a lot of times I'm getting the book like about 2 weeks before we actually have to start recording. So by the time I finished like reading through them and getting, you know, between all my other jobs and life stuff, it's like, I don't really have time to reach out to the author and correspond with them about things. 'Cause by the time I would know what questions I would want to ask, it's like, we got to go. And then generally speaking, I kind of have to let the director direct, because if I say, well, the author said, you know, kind of drama and problems, you know, so like I kind of have to let them do it. 'Cause at a certain point, if there's too many cooks in the kitchen, it kind of, you know, ruin it. So you have to kind of like go that way. But I've gotten to meet several of them after the fact and, you know, can kind of like, you know, ask a little questions, but a lot of times if I just don't have usually it's just a time crunch thing where we just don't have a lot of time to kind of go in there with them. But that usually most of the questions I would have are answered in the text anyway. Like most of the time, all of the background work that you would need is on the page. And that's one of the things that I've kind of learned to love about the books is that, like, you do get to hear their inner monologue. You get to hear, you know, like so many more background details about what's going on and what they're thinking and what other characters are thinking than you would when you see the films, you know. And I obviously I love the films and I always love the films, but like I've learned to really appreciate, you know, how much deeper you can go with books. And I think that is something that really is unique to books is that level of depth that you can get you know, it's really amazing and, you know, nothing else can quite capture it.
I think that that's a really good point to make, especially from one former non-reader to another.
Yeah. I have to reluctantly, my teachers were right.
But again, you know, I still think it's about getting the right book in the person's hand. I mean, even if you didn't finish the Thrawn book, there was something about it that drew you in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. So, just really quickly before we end, unless Stacey has some other questions, I didn't. So, okay. So you brought up a good point. There is a director you're working with when you're
For
audiobooks.
Yeah.
How does that work exactly? Because that's not something I've ever thought of, and I don't know why I didn't, because of course there'd be a director. You're still acting.
Yeah.
It's still you know, it's not like they just give you a book and you're just like
read
and
right
then
out.
Han said, "May the force be with you."
Yeah.
I'm in it for the money. I mean, it doesn't go
right
like that.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty lucky, actually, because I have done books where there is no director, and it really is just like, good luck, yeah, you know. But I think the Star Wars ones in particular, a lot of books do have directors, but just some of the lower budget ones don't really. But the difference it makes is that they can really kind of have the big picture view of what's going on and kind of, you know, help you in the moment, you know, realize we need to make a bigger deal of that paragraph right there, because that is going to, you know, that's foreshadowing what's going to happen in this chapter. And so they can kind of, you know, cause sometimes you can get lost in the moment and kind of, you know, after, cause you know, you're reading from like 10 in the morning till, at least I am, from 10 in the morning till like 5 at night. And sometimes you get lost and, you know, forget all the stuff that's going on. So like, or you kind of, you know, you get fatigued or whatever, you know, or you just can, you sometimes you can maybe just get in a rhythm and just kind of go on autopilot. And it's good to have the director there to kind of like snap you out of it or realize, okay, wait a minute, you kind of glossed over that. When you know, this is much more important to that character, and they can kind of, you know, have that big picture, you know, mindset and perspective as you're going through. And obviously the same way you would with a play or with a movie, you know, the director can, you know, help you come up with choices and bounce ideas off of. And a lot of times I'll come in with my idea for character voices I'm going to do. And a lot of times they'll say, yeah, that's great. Or, but sometimes they'll be like, no, I feel like that character is going to be too similar to this character. Or I don't quite like that version of that voice, because we want to, like, I remember when we were first doing Thrawn, I was kind of latching on to the idea that he was a Chiss in this Imperial Navy that was very xenophobic. So I was trying to like maybe play with an accented voice that would emphasize how foreign he was or how different he was from this, you know, Imperial that hated aliens or kind of had a view towards aliens that they were inferior. But then the director was like, you know, I see him more as like a Sherlock Holmes type character. Like he was pointing out all the, he was locking on to, you know, his deduction and logic powers and like how he could, you know, see things. And so he wanted to kind of play with a Holmes and Watson type voice. So like, mm-hmm, when we first did the 25th anniversary, that's what we were kind of locking on to. So we did like the first couple, first chapter and a half one way. And then he was like, you know what? I want to go back and I want to do this again, because I feel like this is what I really want to focus on. And then we kind of redid that. And so sometimes stuff like that will happen. And it's great to have Kevin there. And the director is really doing an amazing job kind of having that big picture view.
And that's pretty great. And Thrawn is such a good character.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so, so much for joining us.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
We are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.